You are listening to 99.1 WQRT LP Indianapolis, and this is Create Here. Produced by artists and curators from Big Car Collaborative, Create Here is your place to listen to conversations with people making intriguing, innovative, and impactful things happen on the cultural front in Indianapolis, Indiana, and beyond. Find out more and access additional episodes at WQRT.org.
This is Jim Walker, and we're here in the Jeremy Ephraimson Gallery with Nathaniel Russell, who also goes by Nat. And we are going to talk a little bit about Here It Is, It Always Is, your exhibit that you had here with us.
Great. Happy to be here. Thanks, Welcome. Jim.
Yeah, thank you. So this time we thought we would, instead of being in a studio, we would just stand in here in the space. In part, I was kind of interested in that idea because of how much language you have. Every piece, except for two of the found object pieces, have language on them. And even those have language because of a title.
Yeah. I'm into exploring text from a point of, you know, I guess you'd call it poetry or lyrics, how you can put words together to evoke little images or ring certain bells. But I'm also into lettering and letters from a drawing perspective, right, and how that interacts with a drawing or the material is very interesting to me.
Let's go back to the thing you just said about lettering. One of the things I've always loved about your work, which we've been fortunate to work with you and show your work for more than 10 years, is your handwriting. So it's very specifically you, and everybody obviously has their own handwriting. That's how you can like have handwriting experts that can find who wrote a ransom note or
right,
something.
Right.
But what do you think when you look at your handwriting? Have you ever tried to think about what it is about it that is unique to you? And when did you start to be okay or love it or like it or accept it as it is?
It's definitely a choice that I made a while ago. When I was in college, I always liked incorporating letters. I think a lot about design and posters. A lot of the artists that I really enjoyed used lettering, whether hand lettering or carved lettering. And it was, I think it's interesting the way that it's another window into the maker. The human hand being evident is real important to me. And I like the all capitals. That's just like a preference, really. I look at a lot of my earlier heroes or people that I really looked up to used that sort of lettering. It seems like it's a very generic, old fashioned-y way of writing, but there's something about it that's not elevated, but you can still see the hand of the maker in it. It's a little humble to me.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it. So I really liked Ray Johnson. I really liked Chris Johansson. I really liked a lot of, I guess, what you consider like outsider, like folk art stuff, and like Howard Finster. And I like that sort of, what do they call that when there's just like a ton of, is it logorrhea? Is that what they call it? Yeah. It always really interested me. And I had friends who had really good handwriting, and I'm like, you ever find like old notebooks that your parents or your grandparents kept, like old checks and how people used to write? I don't know. It's just an interest of mine that I've pursued for a long time. And I really like the pairing. Like I said, like I like the pairing juxtaposition of words and drawings and how those can inform the meanings of each other. I feel like I also made there's an effort to make it look like there's no effort, I guess. You know what I mean? Like I just, and I like the surprise of how things are going to come out, whether you're drawing lettering on wood or with a crayon, that sort of stuff is important to me. Like it's a surprise and you're out of control a little bit.
So when you always had your own handwriting, but at what point did you feel like I'm okay, I'm good with incorporate? Cause when you were in school, you were doing printmaking, right? So you're maybe then using pre-made letters, like in a letterpress or something like that.
Yeah.
When did, yeah. I mean, was it that far back that you're good with your handwriting being in the work on, right on?
You know, like when you make like etchings and woodcuts and prints and stuff, you're supposed to like sign it at the bottom and sometimes you put the title and the edition number. And I always liked the way that looked. Like, I never saw that as separate from the piece. And I didn't like the way that I signed prints. Like it just felt weird to do like a flashy, like my artist's signature, you know, and it just felt really pretentious. And I just couldn't relate to it. And then I realized, oh, if I'm doing a large edition of prints, I can just put my initials NR capital. Right. 'Cause not only is that economical in a time sense, but it also brings it back to earth a little bit as far as, you know, it's not some flashy signature Picasso. Like, did Picasso sign his checks like that? I don't know, you know? I would say that the handwriting that I use on the paintings and the pieces, it's a little different than, you know, my grocery list.
Yeah.
Because it's intentional and I'm thinking about it, and my grocery list writing is not as cool looking to me,
yeah.
You know, which is why I don't put the grocery list in the art show, you know, but I'm trying to describe it in a way that I feel like is, I can articulate it. You know, I don't feel like I'm trying too hard to be something else, but it's trying to like present the best version of that. You know?
Yeah. When you were bringing work in, you had smaller versions of things with the handwriting on it that were just on a box. So sometimes that is that how you kind of do a sketch? Do you do a sketch of the handwriting or like a, what do they call it? A study?
I mean, it's definitely interesting to put it that way, because if you look at my notebooks, like I said, there's like the to-do list, what I got to go get from the grocery store and what I have to do that day. But when I start like putting titles, like I have in my notebooks, I have lists of titles and words. Those are written differently. So I haven't really thought about it before, but maybe there is a shift where this is going to be a piece of art, or this is something that I'm taking more seriously than, you know, buy bananas, then I write it differently.
Right.
And I mean, that's, and when I was here in the space, where if I would have an idea for a title, I would just write it on the box so I could see it and let it sort of percolate for a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I love studies and seeing sketches and pre-work for the final piece. And it was neat to see how not only you had some of that happening in here, but you basically came in here and built the show and made it in the sight of the space.
Yeah. There were a few pieces that I had made sort of smaller versions of for a project a few months ago, like maybe 10% of the size of these. Mm-hmm. They were like 5x7 little panels. And I drew on those with pencil. And I really liked the way those looked. And I wanted to figure out a way at a certain point when I was in here making it, and I figured out how the show was going to look and what it was going to be. 'Cause it took me a while and fail and a lot of covering up and painting over things to figure out what it was going to be. And once something felt good, I realized I wanted to build off that idea from the previous project, but how to translate something that's 6x9 into something that's 4x8 feet. Mm-hmm. And that's when I'm going to try these big, like they call them hobo crayons, right? Uh-huh. That they use them for marking on metal and train cars, and
they're like a grease pencil
kind of, yeah, like a glorified elevated China marker. Mm-hmm. And that worked out really well because it was a scaled up pencil,
right?
You know.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because if you see handwriting in your notebook, it's you're using a pen or a pencil or whatever that's little and it's in your hand. So how, when you try to do something big, having, you had to scale the pencil.
Right. Right. And I really do. I mean, I think about that. I mean, the scale of the piece to the line is very, very important to me. So that was a problem to figure out. Cause I wanted to draw. I didn't want to paint so much. I didn't want it to look like a brush where I had to go over and make sure it was opaque, and that's fine for certain things. But for this, I just really wanted to figure out a way to make seemingly casual or quick drawings large and big, and how to do that. Just needed a big crayon, you know?
One thing about the size of these is that you can build them here in the space, and a lot of the places that you do work, you have to ship it. Like, you've had shows in Japan. Like, there's no way.
Right. Right. I mean, I've definitely driven a van full of pieces to California before, but it's pretty impractical and takes a week and a half of your life. And so it was a great opportunity. Well, to have a show here is a great opportunity, but also to be able to use the coincidence of the space being empty for a month was great for me to be able to just come here and work and make things in the space and see how they would fit in the space. And yeah, I'd have the freedom to work a little larger and a little less cramped.
Yeah. And this space is really, for people who can't, if you're listening to this, you can't see it probably. It's really high ceilings. It's just a lot of room to work with.
Yeah. It's a great workshop.
And there's a garage door right there where you were able to just bring stuff in and out, wood and.
Right. And if I was doing this like in my typical sort of studio practice, I wouldn't really have been able to do it because it was really cold outside. And so much of I don't have a giant studio. So if I'm working large or if I have to cut wood or let things dry, I have to do it outside. Yeah. And that just wasn't going to be possible.
And this fits really well with previous projects you've done with us. The first one was in our gallery and you pretty much painted the whole thing.
Right, right.
And then you did these big cutouts that were out at our service center location that we still have that were really cool, like big giant coffee cup or a big apple and those kind of things. So it's great to see both. I was talking with some people about this, and part of what you're doing is also, it seems like, enjoying the work aspect of it too. Like the, not only the art work, but the physical work of working with a couple of your friends and.
Right. And I think that's a huge part of it is the process of getting to it, of going to the, you know, going, packing up the truck and bringing it here and unload. I've always been involved. I've always loved doing that part of it. It's that's one of the things I like about printmaking is it's so process based. You have the idea for the image and then you spend hours and hours and hours after that initial sort of romantic burst of creativity and okay, now how do I make this into reality? Right. And the construction aspect of all this was really fun, and trying to use materials that I either already had or had found, or could pick up very cheaply was also real exciting and important to me for this project.
So let's go around the room, maybe from your left to right, and let's talk a little bit about the pieces. The size of most of them ranges between 3 feet plus square to 5, 6 feet
the,
tall.
The big one's basically a sheet of plywood, 8 right. foot by 4 feet.
So starting here on our left, we have our normal music one that is, do you want to tell us a little bit about, and you don't, you know, however you want to talk about these is great. I think
yeah.
Whatever that to me, just there, the words are both a kind of a a title-y thing, but also a poem almost. Just to kind of tell us however you want to talk about it.
Well, my approach on most of this stuff, I feel like is a little bit of exploring a mystery to me. Yeah. My goal for myself is to see if I can like aim for the subconscious a little bit and see if that rings some kind of bell or resonates something. Right. Hopefully it's in a way that I can't quite put my finger on. So it's a little non-specific, but there's some kind of whiff there of something, or, and that to me is what I enjoy about making art and looking at art, is that it brings something up in me that's new or interesting or a memory, and fingers crossed, hopefully it does that for other people too. But this one, yeah, it's called Normal Music. Well, that was a title that I'd used for another piece. I did a show a few years ago of like fake record covers.
Yeah.
And one of the covers was just Normal Music. Like that was the album, right? And there was a picture of a painting of a person on it. And, I've recently given myself permission to recycle, re-explore, re-examine older works, like words, drawings. And sometimes the way that I put it is I think I look through the prism of music and songs when I think about art, and I think about someone who wrote a good song that they enjoy playing and singing, and it's different every time they do it. Maybe they can dig into it a little more and stretch it out. So for me, these are little songs that, and some of them are brand new, and some of them I'm trying out a different bass part or something, you know? Right. But for this one, I drew a picture of a plant in a pot, and I've drawn a lot of those over the years, and I can't put my finger on why. I really enjoy drawing them. There's something about like this domesticated nature, this sort of symbol of, you know, housewarming and domestication of this wild, magical thing that is alive. So that resonated with me, that title and that image. I want it to be pleasing to say and pleasing to look at, and then sort of figure it out, you know. And I think it's also one of my intentions with this too, is there's really only one thing hanging on the wall, and that's this sort of found object, mm-hmm. rock. I really liked the idea of things just leaning on the wall, mm-hmm. and, or being up on stilts, or being made into a table, or just having things off of the gallery wall seemed to me kind of funny in a, like, not like I'm making fun of anything, but interesting way to have an art show in a gallery is to not put anything on the gallery wall. How can I make it a little more difficult on myself, but also make it a little different than other art shows that I've worked on, and just how to explore that angle a little more, to have that freedom, you know? But then that next piece is a very tall pillar. I think it's 8 feet tall, with a log on top of it. In a way, I feel like that's almost related to the Normal Music. It's this, so that log is, it's a found object. It was found in a garage of a house that I lived in. It was perfectly stripped and sanded, and I just thought it was really interesting someone spent the time to do this. But I like elevating these objects of import, but not really knowing the importance, or it's not totally explicit. And I love putting that on top of this sort of white pillar, that I originally I made this at the beginning of the pandemic to skateboard onto. Like it was supposed to be like a skate obstacle. But I recycled it for this show, and the choices of that natural wood with the white and the off-white and the braces, making sure it doesn't fall on anybody. I just love things being mysterious and putting your own feelings or you know, or criticism or whatever you want to put on it. You know, I enjoy that. It's just sort of presenting things. And the piece after that, it's the same size as normal music. The comet came back again. There's a lot of recurring comets and star sort of cosmic themes in a lot of things I've done over the years. I like the word comet a lot.
Yeah.
And I enjoy exploring our relationship to the infinite universe beyond whatever understanding we may have and whatever assumptions we may have about our own importance or meaning in this world. And maybe sometimes how these supernatural events like comets and stars exploding can affect our, you know, commute, you know, right. It's like, it's interesting to me. Moving along, there's the only color painting in here. When the sun goes square, I did a couple other sort of square sun pieces last year. And it's one of those when it's, again, it's sort of referencing like a cosmic supernatural event.
Yeah.
But it's also, I think it's kind of, to me, a lot of these too, I think about like one panel comic strips, like in the Sunday Funnies. And I had a wish for a long time that I could get a job being a cartoonist for a weekly paper or a daily paper, but it wasn't about making a wacky character. It was just like presenting these sort of conceptual nonsense paintings. Which is basically, I mean, if you boil it down, which is what this is.
Yeah.
And I think about, this could be a great, like, this is a kid's book I want to read. There seems to be something beyond this. And I think a lot of it's just presenting like a predicament or, I don't know. I try not to be commanding. Like I try not to give people advice.
Right.
But just presenting scenes, I think, is interesting to me.
Yeah.
And the same with the next one, the listening snake. Snakes are like, they have like a rich, they got a lot of baggage with them. You know, both like in ancient myth and storytelling and fables, also to people are scared of snakes and they're an interesting creature to me. I like drawing them, and they're hard to draw. And I like making these things with a lot of baggage, these things that are threatening. I like making them a little more accessible or giving them a little empathy or sympathy. And again, a book I would love to read or a record I'd love to listen to or a snake I'd like to meet.
So I would say this section to the listening snake, you brought up the word juxtaposition.
Right.
And I feel like this is something that you like to do where there are these opposing things or impossible things. Like comets are one-time deals, right?
Right.
They can't come back. Like it's so, right. But you can, but
right.
You can make a piece of art that has it happen.
Right.
Same thing with a square sun or a listening snake. And really music and plants usually don't go together, but by putting these things together in the poem about log, like you're making something new and giving people new thoughts.
I think that's a good perspective. And, I think, you know, it's hard for me to articulate like what is your artist vision or statement or, but I think a thread that runs through a lot of things and one that I'm trying to explore is the sort of magic and wonder of what we have here and within ourselves or with our family or secrets or jokes or, just being alive in this civilization and society, being a weird, magical being that eats and breathes and sleeps and, how to sort of every now and then reacquaint yourself with that impossibility and wonder of that, which is, you know, when these particular paintings that are against, they're all on stilts or they're all on stands, sort of like old signboards or sandwich boards or something like that. I thought that'd be a pretty interesting way to present these as a sign or as a, if they're not going to hang on a wall, how are you going to see them? And I like the idea of putting one of these in the woods, mm-hmm. or outside of a gallery setting on a sidewalk in a parking lot in a mall, just something that I would be interested in coming across, like putting them in a different environment. I took a picture of the Here It Is, It Always Is piece. I took a picture of that out back by the dumpster, and I thought that looked, I was really into that photo. That piece particular, that's another, it's sort of built off of some of the older flyer pieces that I used to make. Yeah. So it's a photocopy, it's a scan from a book that I manipulated and then photocopied and then wheat pasted and then tore and drew on. And you know, if I look back on where I think that sort of process came from, it's definitely from, you know, making band flyers or photocop, like how to take a photograph and make it as basic and as accessible as possible. So if anything, this is like a poster. This is almost one of those, the end is near, yeah. sort of signs, yeah. but in a way it's sort of, it's acknowledging, you know, to be here now, but without being, without it being a command.
Yeah. It feels like this section kind of coming around moves a little more into philosophy that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that sort of stuff, I look at and read a lot of that stuff just to help me get through life. And what I think about a lot is how to get through life and how to relate to other people and how to connect with other human beings or a certain human being in particular, and how to be vulnerable and how to let someone see you so that you can have this relationship and experience. Right. And that I see that on the micro with just talking to friends or interacting with people at the supermarket, to our individual relationship with the earth and the sun and the universe, right. and whatever else is moving around out there.
These remind me of how a haiku works in a lot of ways. And traditionally the artists who made haiku poems were also making a visual accompaniment mm-hmm. to it. So mm-hmm. it's when you were putting this together, I've been reading a lot of those, and they're of course philosophical and nature based. It feels like right. there's a lot of that energy with
it. Have you ever seen, there's this really cool book, and I'm going to describe them very incorrectly, I'm sure, but there's sort of these Indian mantra paintings. Have you seen these? They're spiritual paintings. That's part of the yeah. practice. It's sort of like, you know, in certain religions, they make a mandala or some sort of shrine or, and that's part of the practice, is the process. But these are like, if you look at them, they look like an incredibly contemporary, minimalist, beautiful paintings.
Yeah.
Those are really important for me to find.
Right.
So this next piece says, "Sing for joy."
Mm-hmm.
That lettering or that word, "Sing for joy." I have a piece of my grandmother's. She was really active in her church, and she used to sew and quilt, and she used to make these sort of quilted hanging banners mm-hmm. for her church. And one of them that I have, it just says "Sing for joy" in this really cool quilted lettering. Mm-hmm. And it's just a beautiful piece, but it's also, what an inspiration. I mean, I love the sentiment.
Right.
And I wanted to borrow that from my grandmother and also pay tribute to that spirit mm-hmm. a little bit. And I don't know, I feel like this is probably the most literal one in a way, because there's a picture of someone playing a trumpet, and, mm-hmm. again, in the moment, that felt like a good choice, you know.
Yeah.
It's because it's literally not singing. But I also really, I think it's important to note too, that a lot of things I just have this desire. It's like, I really want to draw this trumpet. I really want to draw this. How can I make this work? How mm-hmm. can I fit this into this framework? And a lot of it is just seeing what sticks and what fits. So, that was fun to do. And I worked in the space for a few weeks, and I thought I had a good idea of what everything was going to be. And it certainly did not look like this at all in mm-hmm. my head. But after being in here and seeing things taking shape and really struggling and painting over things, it did sort of click as to what I wanted this to be and what was going to feel good to me. And I sort of worked hard to set up an environment where I did have the opportunity to improvise and to go with that sort of follow that first thought, best thought in mm-hmm. a way. So the actual drawing part of it, you know, maybe took me a day or two.
Right.
And the rest of it was assembling it mm-hmm. and sealing it up and putting the sort of final touches on it. And I think that was a real important, interesting thing for me to work on, is following those thoughts and not laboring over them and not second guessing them too mm-hmm. much. So it feels good to be, I mean, these are pretty low stakes risks, but it's still a journey to get there in your head, to give yourself permission to do something that looks simple, or do right. something, have an art show that isn't, you know, fireworks and explosions.
Right.
And that's the sort of art and music and film and everything that I get a lot out of.
Well, it's the times that we live in with so much stimulus. These are opportunities to slow your brain down a little bit and focus, right?
Right. Exactly. And to me, it's all about it all. For me, there's a lot of writing and there's a lot of thinking about things, but when something about just drawing that always just takes me back to the original feeling mm-hmm. of drawing when you're a kid through school. It's fun, and it puts me in the present moment. And especially when you're working with materials that are raw and that you don't have complete control over, there's some revelation and there's some surprises that selfishly or whatever are very exciting to me. And that's enough for mm-hmm. me.
With this next one, the Over Before I Knew It, you sometimes have these utensils and cups and things that are also like visual language. Like you're saying, and I think the same is true with like the plant. They recur in your work, snakes too, hands, people, things. But when it's a thing like a cup, sometimes that's just used for like a sign for, you know, teaching a kid words or, you know, does it feel like to you that sometimes the things you draw are just another way to, obviously it's another way to communicate, but it's close to the same as the words?
I think so. And I think a lot of times it is following that, the mystery or the blurriness. So when I was traveling a lot more, I would just always have this thing I would do every morning. I would just sit with my coffee in the morning, and I would just draw the cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. And that was part of my travel journal. And I'd just write some things. And looking back through my sketchbooks, at some point I was like, wow, I have a lot of drawings of cups and stuff. I really like drawing cups.
Yeah.
And after a while, I realized, well, why does this, I don't know, that feels good. Like, why does that song sound good? I don't know, but I want to listen to it again. So I would just draw that again and draw the bowl and draw that circle and draw. It's just a pleasing shape. It's like in vessels, again, there's a lot of art history, a lot of baggage to that. And there's a lot of metaphors that can fit into that. And you can, again, this is almost one of those comic strip things. It's, oh, this could be very simple, everyday, boring. Oh man, I wish there was more of that oatmeal. Right. Or, you know, or it's yeah. a little deeper than that, or it's not. And, or it can be both things at once. And to me that was fun to explore it. And again, this one, it was just really fun to draw that shape. And, the line is really important to me. And what I feel like is good drawing, is very, very important to me. Same, that piece next to it, the if and of, I love, you mentioned hands. I love drawing hands. I've always loved drawing them when I was in school. I loved looking at like Kathy Kollwitz prints and George Gross prints and these R.B. Katai drawings. And there's something about hands that are just, I love it. I just love drawing the fingernails and I love those long lines. And, it's like how some people just, they love playing power chords. You know, there's something about it that resonates with me that I want to find a way that it must mean something to me. Mm-hmm. It must have something. So how can I fit in a drawing of a hand into this? How can I incorporate this good feeling of drawing in this image into a piece that might be able to say something? Mm-hmm. And the if and the of, I it's like there's one letter difference and the pictures you can sort of interpret it as like the thinker, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I think again, for me, that's about imagining or wondering or about a place where do we belong or, who doesn't wonder what if,
And if you don't cluster these together, they don't have the same connection. So if you're thinking about over before I knew it and the if and then the of, like they just go into each other.
Yeah. And I think different people look at them in different ways. Do these relate? Do they not? I mean, I definitely put that one on the end, so it could be looking inward. You know, I think so much about this stuff is not having clear answers. But just following, oh, that feels right. That feels good. That's a good nose.
Yeah. I would assume that like I've been living with the show here too, because I'm here every day and a lot of this stuff never dawned on me till I stand here with you for a while. And it's probably the same for you where you're like, yeah, maybe that was something, but some of it you thought of and some of it just happened kind of like magically within you, you know?
Right. I mean, I don't know what I'm doing half the time. Like in my life, I'm sort of got things to do and I'm moving through it.
Right.
And it's a happy moment and a pleasure for me to see things working in a way that I wasn't expecting or hadn't fully thought out. And sometimes things don't work, but there's more. Sometimes even when things don't work, I like to think that, well, what am I just not seeing about it? Right. What am I not ready for? How can I open myself up to see how this does work in a different way?
If you think about it as going back to these ideas of poetry or a collection of comics or whatever, that's a whole a section over there that's together. Then we have a page break. We have some space. Mm-hmm. Then we have the rock that's found and the new wall.
Right.
So then that almost is its own. Of anything here, it's got its own background and its own space other than the room that has the sound piece, but
right. No, it's true. Like that's a different, it's a breath. There's a breath between the two. That rock I've been carrying around with me for 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Found it on a beach
in
California. And there's just something about the weight and the shape of it that is just, it just feels, it resonates. It's like, it's hard for me to articulate and I don't know if I would want to.
Right.
But I love to look at it and I love to hold it. And I thought it relates to some sort of spirit or thread that's running through things. And I wanted to present it as such.
Yeah. Some things in here also seem tied to impracticalness or impracticality and practicality.
No, that's a good perspective too. I think there's definitely, I mean, there's a very impractical aspect to my life, but also just to making art and, you know, is art practical in general, you know? And then, you know, the piece next to it, again, I was trying to make a panel, but I didn't, essentially I didn't cut the wood right. correctly. So there were these these things hanging off of it. And then when I moved it vertically, I was like, oh, but it could fit this way. And then my friend Jack, who was helping me, he's a great carpenter. And I was like, can you help me make like some little feet for this to sit into, you know, did you ever see those, like, I'm going to pronounce his name incorrectly, but I believe his name's Chris O'Feely. Mm. He was a painter. Mm-hmm. He's been a well-known painter for many, many years, but yeah. He did a whole series of paintings where they were large pieces, but they were sitting on hardened balls of elephant dung. Mm. Had to do with his roots and where he came from. So I was like, I like that. I want them mm-hmm. to sit on something. Like, I don't just want to have these set on the floor. They need to be like braced or something. And right. he made these beautiful little feet for it and even yeah. used the opportunity. He just got a brand new saw. So he really wanted to use the opportunity to like make these little grooves in them,
right.
which it works perfectly. Yeah. And I love the natural wood color and feel next to the painted. I mean, this is like the oops paint at the hardware store, like right. landlord special right. paint over everything. I love that those two things put together.
Right.
But two views of the dust, and I, you know, I've done a few paintings with dust in the title and smoke, and there's that, you know, dust and smoke. It's you can't catch it. You can't, it could be anything, but I also sort of, I've explored working with spray paint in the past few years in a way that I feel like is true to my sensibility, and not trying to be sort of graffiti person or, right. That's just nothing that I feel like is honest from me. So I sort of cut out these little stencils and was able to sort of, how can I use my imprecise approach to using spray paint and materials in a way that is evocative or magical or something that I couldn't draw if I wanted to.
Right.
And at the same time, I was thinking a lot about, you know, when you walk around construction sites and stuff and they spray paint on the ground and there's overspray and maybe his foot was in the way or something. I like that sort of evidence of another object, or right. maybe that defines the object. But you know, to me, the dust is, without putting too much of a finger on it, it is the untouchable, the unknown, mm-hmm. The outer space, the breath, you know?
Yeah. It feels like you're in a way looking out into the atmosphere from somewhere, even if it's a small thing like smoke or dust,
or if it's land, you know, how beautiful is it when you're like laying on your couch and the sun's coming in the window and you see just how dusty your house is
just rising up in the ray.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like that's a fond memory and also really domestic. And, it's a good feeling for me.
Yeah, for sure.
And then this piece in the middle, the map to the stars homes. I mean, this started again as another panel, the same size as normal music. And then when I did the drawing, which I did the lines first, and I've been really into these ideas of, or just these visuals of maps and trails, sort of an ant farm, mm-hmm. Interlocking path. And I'm a huge believer in the power of the line of what, again, to put it through a music perspective. I mean, these are just, when I think about it, it's like you could be playing, each one of those could be a note on a saxophone or an idea of something else you have to do that day or something that happened to you in your life, and how do we map these things and how do we organize this sort of visual information? And I did start to look at these as a map, and that's where that title came from. In stars, not thinking of the Beverly Hills bus ride, but more about, again, our relationship to the greater universe. And as this became a map, I thought, well, this would be cool to present as like a table, mm-hmm. or something that you look down upon, like a map. And then it turned into sort of, well, let's elevate it. I originally wanted to make this viewing platform to stand up and see the whole show. Hmm. Just as like a directional, sort of stage.
Right.
But then I thought, oh, well, if we put this there, it's almost like when you go to it's like a historical marker, or yeah. it's like using that image or language of like official park maps.
Yeah, for sure.
I was like, I don't think I've seen too many people present paintings like that. So let's try that. And it was fun to make. I knew I really wanted to make a table or a chair. And I chickened out on the chair, except I guess for the bench.
You have a bench in
the
there.
The bench yeah. in there. You know, I was really worried I wouldn't make the chair well and somebody would get hurt. So right. I thought this would be,
that's a safe,
I don't know. It worked. And then it just sort of, you know, it kind of brought the room together for me because there's like a central point to view.
Yeah. The lines also connect with a lot of the pieces, if not all of them. So you can kind of trace the lines, like this curl that fits with the snake's tail, and then yeah. these lines that go into the sun square. And then,
that was nothing I'd thought about until mm-hmm. just now, but yeah. And there is sort of like it sort of evokes that feeling of being behind a podium and mm-hmm. this is your audience.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's an interesting experiment. And I feel like that was the real fun part, or interesting. I use the word interesting a lot, but the thing that was fun to do here was to explore the space in a way that it wasn't things on walls, to make it a little more unique and a little, I try to share these images in a way that would, the context was different.
Mm-hmm. And people can walk behind some of them and
right,
around right. them, or a little kid could run underneath them or whatever.
Exactly. One of my favorite art shows I ever went to, I love the work of a lot of different artists. I really love Chris Johansson a lot. Mm-hmm. And it was in 2008, I went out to New York and I saw a show of his at Deitch Projects. Uh-huh. Incredible show. I probably cribbed a few things from that show here, but one of the things that he really, that I loved, was you could see the back of the paintings mm-hmm. on some of them, and you could see where he signed them. Mm-hmm. And I remember going back another time and just taking pictures of the backs of all the paintings,
yeah.
cause he'd painted them in, I don't know, this like industrial gray color. That was definitely a huge influence on sort of how to arrange a space in a different way and have an art show in a way that's a little different.
Yeah. So we'll end on the audio piece so we can play it at the very end.
Okay.
Your print that's out here in a frame outside of the room where the audio is playing is related to the piece that's in there.
Correct. So it's a drawing from a few years ago. I was at the time, and still, I like the idea of making, I say fake, but it's basic ideas for records, for books, mm-hmm. And for products. And this was sort of a pantry with bottles and jars and boxes of, you know, some food that you would eat, but also sort of imaginary and conceptual ideas that are bottled. Some of them are funny and sad, and that sort of balance is always interesting to me. So we found this, I found that drawing. I decided I want to make a print of it. And I talked to Landon Caldwell, who we've worked together in the past, And when I was speaking to him about it, I was like, I really want to make something that's about one of the pieces. Like this can be the title for the piece. And like, let's make something about this. And he came up with he said something, he's like, oh, this is like the cosmic domestic. And I was like, that's it. I mean, that's exactly the way to articulate it. So then that turned into, well, let's make the most boring radio commercial. Like I say boring in a good way. Like it's not ambient, but it's like background, non-confrontational for this imaginary market that sells these things like a crazy Eddie's on Quaaludes. And, let's do that. So he worked up some of his music, and, I went in with a list of these and some others, list of the products or jars, and just sort of winged it. We did a few takes and then I thought it'd be cool what if we put it in this space, and this could be the space where you come and see this, because it's a beautiful little room and the opportunity to do something in there. And I was like, I was thinking about other rooms that I've been into that are dedicated to pieces of art. You know, there's like Rothko Chapel and until recently, that Terrell piece at Newfields, which I loved. And I was like, well, we got to do something here. We have to make a bench and there's something to look at. And what would mirror this sort of the required patience to listen to this piece is, let's make kind of 3D, 2D version of one of these that matches the other work. And it's a little forced meditation chamber.
Yeah. It's really nice that you're looking at these still things, but they're nicely lit and they're popping out from the wall. But they're not a video moving or, you know, like what would be, this is another juxtaposition of, and also kind of throws people off their expectations a little bit.
I feel like that reflects my interest a lot in the, you know, when I think of it in music terms, it's like, I love like the lo-fi, I love like the audio verite. Like I love hearing the human hand, hearing and seeing the human hand. I feel like that puts a little window on the soul and what it is to be a person. Those imperfections are very important to me. And I feel like this is a way to do that. And you're not in there looking at your phone, or maybe you are, but it's hard these days to sit and look at a thing for 3 minutes and let your mind wander and be bored and not want to wander away.
Right. And the words become part of the music, and just the same as the words become part of the art, the visual art here, where I think all these things are saying, and a lot of what we've been talking about is that music, writing and language, visual and text and a painting of an image are all the same or come from the same place, or all do the same thing and should be not separated.
Correct. And I feel like there's that ordinariness that is just, when you focus on the ordinary, how special things are. And we were joking a little bit about the ASMR thing, and I know nothing about that, but I find it, I'm thinking about it, it's pretty fascinating. It's just the sound of someone talking, or I don't know. I know they open things, but like that is attractive and special to people enough that people make their living off of doing that.
Right.
And I feel like in a way it's making these ordinary, the seemingly simple and unimportant, how that can try to articulate some magical part of our one little moment of our life. If I'm putting a bow on it.
Yeah. And what we were going to do is walk around with the microphones, and they were making a lot of noise, but the microphones are the same as a camera or whatever, in that they're capturing what's around, and we don't need to always try to capture the most amazing thing. That's probably being captured by too many people already.
Yeah.
But it's these normal things.
Yeah. And I feel like with so many things in our world, there's this desire to have an answer, to mm-hmm. have there be some sort of binary right and wrong,
right.
or this is good, this is bad. When really, to me, there are so many things that are great about all of it. And if you just had one thing to look at, that would be terrible. You know,
right.
you need the full spectrum. And there are people out there who can do the labor intensive, the things that I can't do or don't have an interest in.
Right.
There's people that are doing that I can go look at. And there's not good and there's not bad. It's just, it's a full, it's a well-rounded breakfast, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's an important part of this meal is all the food groups.
Right. Well, I thank you, Nat, for this show and for talking with us about it. And, when people want to know more about your work or where you're showing next or whatever, and find some things that you have for sale on occasion, your music and stuff, where do they go?
My Instagram is just my name, Nathaniel Russell. I've been in the process of updating my website for a long time, but there is a mailing list that you can get on. But I use the social media primarily right now.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you so much, Nat.
Thanks, Jim.
Welcome to Pantry Connection. Pantry Connection. Your connection for this connection. Now, including old snow. Baby tears. Grass. Corn kernels. Atlantic Ocean. Salsa. Beard of Zeus. Nice smell. Evil. Space dust. Grave dirt. Dance moves. Long hair. Beef stew. Fuzz. Yogurt. Also, big shapes with names. Pantry connection. Your connection for this.